Blog Talk Radio.
Wonderful Thanksgiving, Turkey Day. I'm notorious for Turkey Day. I wasn't around much. I was surrounded by a couple of folks all day long, and then I had to go to my sister's. Otherwise, she would have like sent out the troops after me. So I wasn't really around much, and I apologize for that, but I hope everyone had a really nice day, whether it was here or elsewhere. And hello, Rex. How are you tonight?
Good evening. What's happening?
Good evening. Not too much. We have a wonderful board for tonight. We have some carryovers from a couple of shows, and we have wonderful poetry waiting for us. And, other than that, there's not a whole heck of a lot. I'm looking forward to the poetry tonight. We have a lot of good names on the board, you know. A way lot.
Oh, absolutely.
So did you have a nice turkey day?
Yes. I cooked it Wednesday. It rained all day Thursday, so just how it goes.
Kick back and relax a little. There's nothing wrong with that. I went to my sister's. My sister has 5 children, ranging from the age of 8 to the age of 5, I think. So, you know, we never know what's going to happen there at my sister's. And she went out a really nice meal. But, and of course, I was in charge of the fruit salad. And I was like, okay, I can do that. That's not complicated. You know, most of the time I cook here at home because I just think that's always nice to just have the leftovers to kind of lean back on. But she did a fine job, and it was fun. And my grandson's been there ever since. It's like we drive up, we eat, we leave the kid, and we come home. Works. I think he's coming home tomorrow. You know, but that's what he wanted to do, so that's what he did. You know, why argue? You know, they're only young once, and my nephew is my grandson just turned 12. My nephew's 15. And then, of course, the other one, he's 19. You know. And so he's got plenty of folks up there to, you know, flutter around with. So that's a good thing. Anyway, me, I just kind of came home and said, what did I do? I didn't get a turkey sandwich last night, which kind of ticked me off, but I worked around it. I think I had some ice cream or something. Maybe it wasn't ice cream. I don't know what I had. I had a little something. And then today I had turkey sandwich for lunch, which was okay.
Oh, you got
it. Yeah, exactly. My sister's like, here, take more of that. Here, take more of that. She's having this big tray of mashed potatoes. I'm like, what am I supposed to do with all these mashed potatoes?
Oh, that's perfect.
You know.
You're molding into patties and you have pan frying.
Yep, you got that. You got everything. There's all kinds of possibilities. You know, make a turkey kind of shepherd's pie. Just mix all that stuff together, put a pot pie in, and throw the potatoes on top. That sounds like a winner to me. But, yeah.
Oh,
I don't know. There's so many things to the turkey.
A nice bowl of fried chicken fingers and mashed potatoes.
There you go. It was just a nice, relaxed kind of thing going on, you know, and I like that. I like to just kind of sit back and enjoy each other. I mean, we're all going to get together. Let's just have some fun. Yeah, so of course we all harassed each other because that's what we do best. This clan is brutal, you know. Everybody picking on everybody. All right. Wasn't my turn in the barrel last night, so it works. You know how that is. Not my turn. Her turn. Sorry. Yeah, I'm chuckled. But anyway, so that's about the Thanksgiving thing, and I'm glad you had a nice day. Hope you got to kick back and relax, you know, a fair amount anyway, you know. And, yeah. All kinds of fun. So listen, we have a caller on the line, and yeah, maybe we'll get another one, too, dependent. But right now we have Laurent with us. So hello, Laurent. Welcome to the party.
Thank you. Happy Thanksgiving.
Hey, Laurent.
Good to be here. Hey, Rex. How you doing?
Good.
Same to you.
Is he really 12 years old, Gene?
Yes, he is.
Wow.
Yes, he is.
Wow.
I have the gray hair to prove it.
Still making you scream, is he?
Nah. No, that's the big one. That's the big one. Yeah, so, hang on a second. I got to send word. I have to send word out to the world. Smoke signals, you know. Yeah, it was a good day, and he just turned 12 on the 18th of November.
You tell him happy birthday.
I will. I told him that a couple times. 13, I don't know how we're going to make it into 13, but we made it to 12, so that's good.
Well, for me.
And, so anyhow, let's see now. What else? Well, you know what? I guess I should shut my mouth and get working on this because I think we have like 24, 25 pieces on the board.
29.
That's a lot. 29, did you say?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Okay, well, I guess I was only off by 5. wow. Okay, so I'll tell you what. I'm going to start with the 3 carryovers from yesterday. Because we got to do Thanksgiving leftovers, right? You know, it's the day after Thanksgiving.
Why not?
Leftovers are always wonderful. What'd you say, Rex?
I said, why not? Leftovers.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. We've got to do Thanksgiving leftovers. Okay, I'll tell you what. I'm going to put this
one know. They're not quite leftovers. I see them as cagely hoarded bits of delicacy.
That's it. That fits the poetry, too. So it works. Anyway, we word it. Okay, let's see now. Rex, I'm going to have you start us off with this one. And it's called In the End, There Was Silence by Jimmy. Or In the Silence, Jimmy. By WPM or WP McLeod. Sorry. I murdered that. Massacred it. I'm going to show it now. Thanks.
In the End by WP McLeod. In the end, there was silence. Jimi Hendrix slept on a stone slab, and Lady Gigolo stubbed her cigar on a park bench covered with fog dew. Rock me, baby, all night long. You sang to the gibbous moon, squinting 2 eyes in silver and slivers of gold bullion, living together in ornaments of blue Waterford patterns etched on the china plates and platonic cups ornamented with symposia scenes and Gentile deer drinking water. Wine from flasks and flagons of cut glass and island-blown bubbles, swelling around an unlit flame, burning inside the orange glow of uncut tobacco leaves, parched by early death, and the smoke rising in blue swirls as the gate tilted open. In the end, sugar and salt, wet in a recipe for Mexican chili, plastic flutes whistled at the girls on skateboards, and I watched you dance the tango on pinwheels. End poem. Nice. All right. Why don't you kick us off? What'd you think?
Yeah, I like In the End quite a bit. Anything that starts with Jimi Hendrix is all right with me. The image of him sleeping on a stone slab is a very interesting one. He takes a lot of familiar lines. Rock me, baby. All night long, he sang to the gibbous moon, which I think is a very nice line. I like the details, the ornaments of blue Waterford patterns etched on a china plate, and platonic cups ornamented with a symposia scenes and genteel deer drinking watered wine, etc., etc. It's almost like a long run-on sentence, but it's done delightfully. Very nice piece.
Absolutely. And Gene, what about you?
Well, you know me, right? I'm going, I thought it was nicely done abstract imagery throughout. And intriguing thoughts, you know, the uncut tobacco leaves parched by early death and the smoke rising in blue swirls as the gate tilted open in the end, sugar and salt wed in a recipe for Mexican chili. Intriguing, very intriguing to me. You know, the Waterford patterns and the china plates, you get that for your, well, you know, that can be pulled in Thanksgiving, but it was just different places, and it was unique and well done. So thank you very much, W.P. McLeod. Nice work.
Excellent. Thank you very much. I do like the abstract thought in this, and it does walk on that angle of the 1960s LSD acid trip type of thing. But outside of that first stanza, everything else that was walked through with this kind of is that image viewed in a kaleidoscope as you turn it one frame at a time and you see the next image boiling up front. All those things that come to your mind's eye when you are tripping, those things that stand out, that crystallize in the moment, the blue Waterford patterns, cut glass and island-blown bubbles, the uncut tobacco leaves that the yellow morphs into orange and then into brown, and the blue swirls, again, kind of walks down back to the opening stanza, the park bench covered with swamp dew. It's kind of a note of finality in that opening stanza, and the back end just kind of walks into the those thoughts of yesterday, what once we held to heart, so to speak, the thought of the girls on skateboards, the plastic flutes, the sugar and salt, a nice touch to the not just the chili, but also margarita. So, nicely done, WT. Thank you very much.
Margarita. Now we're talking off network. Now we're talking. Mm-hmm. I had me a wee bit of gin the other night. Don't tell me. Don't tell. Okay. Now the next one I'm going to put up. It's a piece by Collab. I actually have an audio for it. So this is called I Believe by Collab. And it's here. I know it's here. Here we go.
I Believe in by Collab. I believe in creaking doors that swing without an author behind them. The smell of frangipani hanging a few feet above my head in its native land, the din of the monsoon on corrugated roofs, and the bobbing pigtails of the girl I once knew, her wobbling, beaten knees and scrawny legs that still skip rope rocks in flowing creeks, and the rosy cheeks at the thought of the boy she never got to kiss, those wild black crickets hiding hopelessly from my hunting skills, that hammock of grandma still swinging, even when she's gone and it too. That flaxen colonial villa dilapidated, now replaced by a white Chinese wedding cake a few layers up. That arched hallway of that private French school with light streaming through, and the mean Khmer teacher getting off with his ruler over tips of my fingers. That low sky of cotton ball clouds and those endless patchwork of tender green squares of rice shoots. Those trees in all the continents that I try to understand, what they try to tell me. All that blood, killings of man against man. Those pink-rimmed lotuses bobbing from ponds and spilling over their edge just to make their statement. That face of yours that I saw one last time as the Fiumicino metro doors closed on it, but only after you've given one last earthly gift, the proverbial last kiss. And ah, those mangoed sunsets, those funky local chickens that strut all around the lawn and streets as if they owned the place, part of the extended family. That pouring rain on my face as I swim face upwards to greet all there is to greet. In the name of Allah, Jehovah, Yahweh, Jesus, Buddha, and in the name of love. End of poem.
Great read, Collab. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. All right, Jim, you got the first look behind this door.
Who did you ask?
Gene.
I should have known it was me because I didn't answer, so that's always the way. I thought this was a wonderful piece by Collab. Wonderful imagery throughout the entire poem from beginning to end. From the creaking doors, you know, she hits a lot of the senses. She gave us things to look at. She gave us things to smell. She gave us things to hear. And I think that that's always a wonderful blend for a poem. It kind of involves all of your senses. And I think that's wonderful. It's just a really great written piece. And, you know, I love how she tied it up here. Let me see. Those funky local chickens that strut all around the lawn and streets as if they own the place. Part of the extended family. That pouring rain on my face as I swim face upwards to greet all there is to greet. In the name of Ahura, Mazda, An Allah, Jehovah, Yahweh, Jesus, Buddha, and in the name of love. And, you know, the way that she pulled it all together into that ending, I thought was just beautifully done. So great job, Collab, and thank you so much for sharing with us. Wonderful piece.
Thank you, Jim. And Laurent, how about you?
I don't often use the word haunting, but this is haunting in a different way. The memories are so real, so tender, so accurate to the Cambodian country in which are described in this particular poem. That arched hallway of that private French school with light streaming through the mean Tamir, teacher getting off with his ruler over tips of my fingers, that low sky of cotton ball clouds, and those endless patchwork of tender green squares of rice shoots, marvelously written. I love the way she treats trees, those trees and all the confidence that I try to understand what they try to tell me. All that blood killings of man against man, those pink-rimmed lotuses bobbing from ponds. Her imagery is really quite remarkable, and the way she integrates her native country into this is really quite impressive. And I love the way it ends, in the name of all the various gods and in the name of love, as it should.
Excellent. Well said, Daron, and you're right. This was visually stunning, and I did like that opening. You started with the private French school, but what she threw in ahead of that was equally fascinating. That flaxen colonial villa dilapidated, now replaced by a white Chinese wedding cake a few layers up. That was a hell of a vision there, a white Chinese wedding cake, something stark in its underlying truths. But I like that this walks as a before, during, and after. This visual memory in this is quite stark, especially when you get down to the blood, all that blood killings of man against man, and so on and so forth. You get on that, but also the imperative of noting that bobbing pigtails of a girl I once knew, her wobbling, bruised knees and scrawny legs that still skip rope, rocks and flowing creeks, as the rosy cheeks, as the thought of the boy she never got to kiss, those wild black crickets hiding hopelessly from my hunting skills. Early life materialized in the moment, but then again drawn back on because of the starkness of the reality of what came afterwards. And then the finishing notes of this on the back end were equally stunning and revealing to the thought of there are better ways to actually do things and put people through this kind of horror, especially children.
Mm-hmm.
Nicely done, Colab.
Nice. Right, coming, guys. And just so you know, I picked up Emmy on the way back to here, and pick her up. Hello, Emmy, and how are you tonight? Good to have you with us.
I'm good.
Hello, Emmy.
How are you?
Good evening, Emmy.
Good, thank you. Did you want to make a comment on Colette's poem before I move on?
Yeah, I was gonna talk about the flow a little bit because there's really no stanza breaks here at all, and it really sort of just floods. It's like this constant stream of just detail and memories, and it's so like raw in the way that it goes about that. Maybe raw is not the right word. It, in a way, it reads almost simply, but it's covering so much with so at the same time. So yeah, it was a lovely piece.
Well, thank you, Amy.
Laura, I'm going to put the next piece up for you to read. And this is by the Playful Poet, and it's called Thor in the Kitchen. Whenever you're ready.
Thor in the Kitchen by the Playful Poet. Thor is in the kitchen with a white apron tied around his waist. His huge hands stuff the cornbread dressing into the stomach of a turkey. The air whiffs with the scent of thyme and parsley as he throws the bird in the oven. He's tired of fighting freaks with huge ego problems, tired of a brother who messes with his mind, tired of a woman he can't understand. Now he's going to do what he always wanted to do. He's going to cook. And
great read, Laurent. Thank you very much. And Emmy, why don't we start with you, please?
Thyme and parsley. It's two bird herbs, I guess is the word. Yeah. I think I almost like the mention of like the third stanza, or sorry, fourth stanza. He's tired of fighting freaks with huge ego problems. The brother who messes with his mind of a woman he kind of, it's all there. But it's no less very much in the spirit of like cooking food and just being in the kitchen. And I can actually relate to this on a very personal level, as I often cook food to escape the stress of everyday life. So that is actually real.
Nice. Thank you. And Gene, how about you?
You know, I found it to be humorous. I did. And, you know, I pick up with what Emmy was saying, you know, he's tired of fighting freaks with huge ego problems, tired of a brother who messes with his mind, tired of a woman he can't understand. You know, it's time for a new project, a new take on things, and you just want to cook. I like it. I like the idea, the concept. But it was nice brevity and, you know, comical and fun. So it was a nice job, playful poet. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Thank you, Gene. All right, Laurent, you got to read it. How about you?
Oh, I love this piece. Thor is in the kitchen. I don't believe that Thor is a metaphor for every man who's just tired of his life. I think it literally took Thor, probably the Marvel Comics Thor, as illustrated by Jack Deb, by Jack Kirby, and took the storyline, given the stanza that Gene read, he's tired of fighting freaks with huge ego problems, tired of a brother who messes with his mind, tired of a woman he can't understand. Now, yeah, he fights these evil superheroes. He's got a woman who is a little too complex for him. So we have this image of the huge Thor. And what does he do for the new life? Well, he's got to cook, and that's so different, so startlingly different from the original Thor that I did, as Gene said, think it was very humorous. Very well done.
Absolutely. Thank you. It is funny because I too like that. He's tired of fighting freaks line. It hits on the idea of admittance being one of those freaks that does fighting. So it's kind of a punch back at himself as well. And I like the fact that he went playful with this and rolls along with his title, The Playful Poet. So having a little fun at Thor's expense and just offering up the notion of just getting away from it all. Nicely done. All right, King, back to you.
Okay, that was our last one from Thanksgiving Day. So thank you, Richard, for running that wonderful contest for Thanksgiving, and thank you everybody who contributed to everyone else's Thanksgiving. I think that's wonderful. It was a great way to, share with everyone. Okay, so now I'm going to go back to the top of the list to our carryovers from last week. So let me grab this one. Oh, no, I can't do that one. Emmy, can I get you to read one for me? Oh, wait. Hang on a second. Let me back myself.
That reminded me of something, too. Gallagher just died recently. Gallagher, you remember the comic Gallagher? I remember that because he used to bring out on stage. It was called the Sledge-O-Matic, and it resembled Thor's hammock.
Absolutely. Okay, well, I was going to ask Emmy to read, but the first two I have on the board are both audios. So I'll put the first one up, and this one's by Titus Llewellyn. And let me hit the button on that one. And here goes.
The Ark of Impediment. A canopy of words do keep many raindrops away, while the storm itself spreads all doom and gloom overcast. The sun, wishing well a rainbow to survey, the arc of impediments, raising all hope I'd assume, shaking their diminished responsibilities to clouds, whose warily agape has understood the gaze up high. A dilapidated fall from the heavens is God shrouds us with gloomy skies, for whatever reason do or die. He rhymes rain with pain and this love from above, a sheltered haunt he taught me to lead by example, like sunlight through the clouds, so befitting hereof leaves do fall, while the passing breeze does trample. During fall, a sky stalling to reiterate a darn headache, berating while we are waiting, whose forecast it was, to speak of scattering amounts, while so wide awake, periods between the rains became a sun's good cause.
Great read, Titus. Thank you for the time. It is very much appreciated.
All right, Laurent, why don't we start with you? What do you got?
Well, I appreciate the rhyming, and it's a great deal, but it's that look at the storm, the clouds, whose warily agape has understood the gaze up high, as the dilapidated fall from heavens is God, shrouds us with gloomy skies, for whatever reason, do or die. And I love the phrasing in this, and this look at words that forestall the storm, and the storm itself, which becomes periods between the rains, become a sun's good cause. It really takes us places that we might not ordinarily go. Remarkably good.
Excellent. Thank you very much. And Emmy, how about you?
Yeah, I think the line that really stuck with me here was, during fall, a sky stalling to reiterate a darn heartache. First of all, like, good use of scent rhyme, and I think that's just present throughout this poem, or internal rhyme, rather. Just this sort of like melancholy that comes with the passing of seasons, and then sort of taking longer than would be considered normal, and as if to sort of rub it in, if that makes sense. It was a very complex and well-structured piece.
Excellent. Thank you, Emmy. All right, Jean, how about you?
I thought this was a beautifully penned piece by Titus. As always, you know, I much enjoyed it. A canopy of words do keep many raindrops away, while the storm itself spreads all doom and gloom, overcast, the sun wishing well a rainbow to survey, the arc of impediment raising all hope, I'd assume. But it was such a great intro stanza to the piece, because it really got you thinking about all these different images. And it was nicely done. And I want to thank Titus for sharing with us tonight. Really nice work.
Excellent. Thank you, everyone. I, too, got stuck with a canopy of words, because that's actually what he did. He gave us a little peek into that second stanza when throwing a gape and gaze up in that one stanza. But then he rolls off a nice batch of thought from his tongue with rhymes, rain with pain and this love from above, sheltered haunt he taunts, and there was what else, leaves do fall while passing the breeze, during a sky storm in 3 days. Now I've left my place. Damn it. Anyway, I like to play off double angles on the word choice of words he hit in this to offer up that canopy of words for the voice he wanted to illuminate.
Right.
Thank you, Tidy.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, for my next magic trick, I'm going to put a piece up by Naomi Sarah called Digging. And I have no idea for that one as well. So here we go.
Digging a hole I tumble into again and again, trying to wrap around my wrist images of what is missing, weave them into a rope to hoist myself up. But only remains the lies of nothing, a shrill laughter. It's Saturday night. I'm smoke to the filter. Fallen from a window, crashing heavily to the ground, elbows, knees, palms bloody, running towards yet another level will cover my wounds in Mickey Mouse band-aids.
Great read, Naomi. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. All right, Gene, since it is a on the brevity side, you get first dibs.
Wow. This is a wonderful piece. You know, digging, I thought we were going somewhere completely different. But digging a hole, I tumble into again and again. And I'm going, okay, okay. And that center stanza was great. But when you get down to that that last stanza, it really, there's no doubt about what's going on. I mean, you know, she's leading into it as we go along. But, and it's Saturday night. I've smoked through the filter, fallen from a window, crashing heavily to the ground, elbows, knees, and palms bloody, running towards yet another lover who will cover my wounds in Mickey Mouse band-aids. You know, like, not really band-aids at all when you come down to that. It's just something superficial, something cute, something that's not really going to, it's not like the good old time band-aids. Just, no. Yeah, being alive there. But it was very nicely done, Naomi. I really, I totally get it, and I appreciate it very much. Thank you for sharing this with me.
Thank you, Gene. And Laurent, how about you?
It's brutally. This is a brutally painful poem in many ways, and how many of us haven't done exactly what she does, digging a hole that one tumbles into again and again and trying to make it right, but the only thing that remains, the lies of nothing, a shrill laughter. And I agree with Gene on the last stanza. It's got some absolutely memorable lines. I'm sure everybody appreciates some smoke through the filter, fallen from a window, as she tries to get out of life with what she wanted, another lover, someone who understands her, someone who'll take care of her, but it's just another person going to cover her wounds in Mickey Mouse band-aids. In other words, temporary relief, but nothing that's going to cure the ills. Great piece, Naomi.
Absolutely. Well said, Laurent. Thank you. And Amy, how about you?
I guess I could start by going over the second stanza, because I remember I was reading that and thinking, like, okay, wrapping around my wrists, like, images of what is missing, weave them into a rope to hoist myself out. I read that, I was like, ooh, as in that's, like, really, really high-level kind of stuff. Being that, you know, it sort of leads you one way and then twists things and moves you in another way. Really popped off with that one. And then the last line, of course, everyone's pretty much gone over that, but that's just such an excellent finishing concrete detail that just, it's not often actually I see this in poems. I guess I wish I saw them more, where like the final line really sort of hits you like a train wreck, and that's definitely what I saw here, because for the most part, the picture itself is kind of obvious, but then it's like, well, Mickey Mouse Band-Aids, like, obviously that's, I mean, it's a play on the whole, like, putting a Band-Aid over a very serious issue, but the Mickey Mouse, it's almost like a trivialization of that, as if those, mm-hmm. those things don't even exist. So, yeah, wonderful stuff. Sorry for rambling.
Well, Andy, thank you.
Sorry,
and that's it on the choices and expectations that all lead to the very same thing. Kind of hits on the idea of knowing and understanding oneself, yet they're unable to take themselves out of the equation that they always end up with, and that's making rash choices, poor decisions that lead them back to that last stanza. But like everyone said, it's just a brief respite with nothing to hold on to afterwards, which leads back to digging that hole once more and falling into it yet again. It's kind of almost understanding a hollow existence, yet you still dig more of it into it because you need something in the moment, and that moment always seems to be at hand. Nicely done, Naomi. Thank you very much. All right, Jean. If I could continue.
Okay. Well, now I'm going to do something kind of crazy. I'm putting a poem up, and I'm not sure if we read it last week, so forgive me. But I liked it, so if we did, well, forgive me. Here we go. This is called Shooting Stars and Fireflies by Dammit Dave. Rex, can you give this a read for us?
Sure. Shooting Stars and Fireflies by Dammit Dave. Sometimes true love comes not as shooting stars. It may come as a beacon in the night. It may appear as fireflies in jars or as a crescent moon with tempered light. A moor may not explode upon the scene. It may creep up and catch you unaware. Most oftentimes, it's somewhere in between. No matter how, it's still a grand affair. Sometimes true love approaches as a friend. In time, you build devotion, warmth, and trust. You never know what lies around the bend, for diamonds often hide within the dust. So whether you see stars or fireflies, you'll know by the reflection in her eyes. End poem. And Laurent, I'd like to start with you, please.
Well, it's a great piece. Love, you know, darts sideways and approaches obliquely. One never knows when it will hit. Part of its charm, I gather. It's superior writing and rhyming.
Absolutely. Thank you, Laurent. And Andy, how about you?
This is I think this really, really went into like a lot of the different details surrounding love and sort of really kind of hit it on the nail with the last line where you'll know by the reflection in her eyes. The sort of the value is not necessarily in all of these different things here, but the way in which they're perceived, and that ultimately love is defined by how the other person sees you just as much as it is how you see them.
Excellent. Thank you, Amy. And Jean, how about you?
You know, I really enjoyed this piece. That's what made me think maybe we read it last week, because I remember saying something about how much I like fireflies. But, you know, I like the intro stanza to this. Sometimes true love comes not as shooting stars. It may come as a beacon in the night. It may appear as fireflies in jars or as a crescent moon with tempered light. Yeah, I like the intro of this very much, but I also love that third stanza. You know, sometimes true love approaches as a friend. In times you build devotion, warmth, and trust. You never know what lies around the bend, for diamonds often hide within the dust. I thought that was just, you know, those are the stanzas, but the third one is a real kicker there. And those last few lines where you just can't say. You can't beat those. They're wonderful. So that was an excellent job, and thank you, Dave, for sharing with us.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. The paint here for Dave is the unexpected nature of its of how it how it comes to bear itself upon one. It could be subtle, or it could be slap you upside the head, or it could be staring you in the face and the unreality it poses. You don't notice it until all of a sudden you kind of have to wake up to the notion because somebody said something. Nicely done, Dave. All right, Gene, we're back to you.
Okay, Emmy, can you read the next one for me? This one's by Kiku, and it's called Sympathetic.
Sorry. I had to go get something really quick. Oh, okay, shit. Okay, so this is Symptomatic by Keiku. The winter sun crawls across my scalp while a desert ravages on in my throat and sits like a frog that loiters too long before it decides to jump out the mouth. From the amber file, oblong tablets slip between my careless fingers, but I hang on to scentless irises. No, the earthen rhizomes on the tailcoat of a priest to exorcise the unsightly, fervid demons. Feed me a bowl full of your warm poetry soup or a freshly brewed gingered metaphor that I may cough up painless words and find comfort in your summertide poems. End poem.
Great read, Emmy. Thank you very much. And Gene, we're going to start with you, please.
Okay. What a clever and unique piece is it? You know, leading in, the winter sun crawls across my scalp while the desert ravages on it in my throat. When you get down to the author's notes, it says, it's flu season. I had to write about this one in Sixth Wednesday. So she found such a unique way of writing about the flu and the symptoms and, you know, how she's been feeling. So it was a very well-done piece. At first, I didn't realize that, you know, that's what we were talking about. And then I got down to the author's notes, and I went, okay, I'm here. The bowl of soup and all that other mentions. I mean, it makes sense perfectly. So wonderful job, Kiku, and thank you for sharing with us tonight. I really liked it. Nice job.
Thank you, Jean. And Laurent, how about you?
I absolutely agree that poetry can be a kind of a calming balm. It can distract us from the way that we're feeling. The metaphors and imagery of poems can ease the pain that we feel. I love the description, the winter sun crawls across my scalp while a desert ravages on in my throat and sits like a frog that loiters too long before it decides to jump out the mouth. You want to talk about words that will grab your attention immediately? Fascinating, well presented. Love the way it was formed, and just a great piece overall. Bravo, Keith.
Thank you, Rob. And Emmy, you got to read it. How about you?
Yeah, this was definitely some parts, I guess, more thought provoking. The earthen rhizomes on the tailcoat of a priest to exorcise the unsightly fervid demons. It's sort of like I just don't think I would have been able to write that. And so in a way, it's almost like a signature of one's poetic style of a rather well developed voice. And I hope I did good service to it with the read. Of course, the first stanza is wonderful as well. The winter sun crawling across the scalp, the ravaging desert, a very proper and apt description of being down with the flu.
Absolutely. Thank you. I mean, the bike came with the winter sun to open up and finish out with the summertide poems as a note to nothing worse than a winter cold and then fighting it off to end up with that summertide poem. But the metaphors were wonderful in this, but I love the thought, and that's opening up that third stanza. Feed me a bowl full of your warm poetry soup or a freshly brewed ginger metaphor. Great thoughts running through that. But the that bowl of poetry soup hit me with the thought of those books, Chicken Soup for the Soul. So this kind of works its way as poetry soup for the soul. So the back end of feeding is the idea of relief, something that takes away the energy and the hard-pressed notion of how you feel in the moment on a different plane, because you're dipping into the warmth of something else that pleases you as well. Thank you, Kiku.
Yeah. Okay, so the next one I'm going to put up is by Arcana Amore, and it's called Twilight Promises. And I have an audio for that one.
I see that. Let me go up here.
Here we go.
Is etched in twilight promises. Through waves of pitch that drown the day, where altars flicker with dancing candles, playing melodies of light to somber shade. Shooting stars race the speed of silence. The globe cries shadows in waning whispers. Amid the black veneer of midnight's tarnish, cascading hours melt into seas of yore. Magic blows forth in moonlit glimmers, ethereal enchantments feed the ether with adept adroitness. She speaks in spells to hark the heed of attentive archangels. Are swathed in cloaks of darkness, ritually recited with reverent respect. In cascading calls to distant deities, singing out midst the ebony chant of night. Goddess heeds pleas from Wiccan prayers. With guidance, she points a pathway yonder to illumine the fate of charmed intentions. Through Empyrean stairs, from immortal eyes, as the clock speaks chimes to call of morn, her craft awakes prophecies asleep in dreams, summoned adeptly with divine divination, whilst sorcery soars through sacred skies.
Great read, Arcana. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. All right, Laurence, what do you think of this?
Wow, this is a terrific piece. Very special. You don't read too many poems in praise of Wiccan or witches. The entire thing is couched in darkness from beginning to end, and often wondered why most sorcery is described as something that occurs in relative darkness or at night or the witching hour, as if it couldn't stand the light of day, which I've always found interesting, as if it was something secret, something not to be shared, and yet it is shared, and successfully so. Goddess heeds pleas from Wiccan prayers. With guidance, she points the pathway yonder to human the fate of charmed intentions, to Empyrean stares from immortal eyes, as if there was a method of experiencing for almost forever the benefits of the sorcery that is so beautifully described in this piece. As far as which stanza, the second stanza stands out for me, amid the black veneer of midnight's tarnish. It's really well phrased, and the whole piece is excellent.
Nice. Thank you, Laurent. Gene, how about you?
I thought it was a wonderfully penned piece by Arcana. It was well-worded and full of detailed elements. There were so many great stanzas throughout the entire piece. Like, each one was very... just well-crafted. I did go with the intro stanza, but, you know, they were all good. It's just a matter of, you know, what do you do, right? And I thought, well, we go with the one you start with. Her covenant is etched in twilight promises through waves of pitch that drown the day, where altars flicker with dancing candles, playing melodies of light to somber shade. It really sets the stage for the rest that happens, and I like that about it, because, you know, once you put that backdrop and you set a stage, you know, all the rest just kind of it adds into it, and it works out beautifully. And I think that Arcana did a great job, and as always, you know, his audio was very well done. I do enjoy those very much. So thank you, Arcana, for sharing with us. I really appreciate it, and a great piece of music behind us. His friend who's doing the music behind his pieces now. It's nice. Great job.
Absolutely. And Annie, how about you?
I actually quite enjoyed this sort of portrayal of incantation magic, if it were. I guess mostly primarily as something that's sort of like a communication between the person reciting it and the deities, in this case the calls to distant deities. It's actually not much different from prayer if you think about it. And then another detail that sort of caught my eye was her words are swathed in cloaks of darkness, as being something that describes an aspect to that often I don't really see in a lot of fictional depictions of magic. It's often like the speech of the person giving the incantation would necessarily change in the sound and the texture of it, as a way of actually appealing to, and of course you would learn that type of speech to prevent just about anyone from actually doing that. So, I mean, that's sort of an interesting detail to me. I have been kind of a nerd for this sort of stuff. The other thing I noticed here was the alliteration, which is very, very strong throughout the poem. Shooting stars race the speed of silence, or the last line there, wilt sorcery soars through sacred skies. So that was a very, very kind of a constant element of the poem that I noticed.
Excellent. Thank you, Emmy. Yeah, but by the time you get down to that second last stanza where he offers up the Wiccan prayers, you actually get the notion of where he's going with it. It's not about black magic. It's about the elemental magic of nature itself and being able to understand, draw, and speak that language in a manner which it doesn't dispossess oneself, but actually embrace oneself within that realm itself. So, nicely done there, Arcana. And the music for this, in fact, damn, your audios are outstanding. Thank you very much. All right, Jane, we're back to you.
Hi. Yeah. Hey, Stelina, welcome to the board. Okay, I'm going to read the next piece. And this is by Darkened Auras, and I hope I don't trip over myself too much throughout. This is called The Demon Meets His Angel Wife by Darkened Auras. He had helped kill his sister. She was ill and begged him so. Took away her misery, but when he died, he became a demon down below. Each night he stalked the forest where he first met his wife, shared their first kiss, and consummated back in his mortal life. One night 10 years later, he saw her standing there. She had become an angel with shiny, long brown hair. He ran up to greet her. She fell into his embrace as the glow got brighter all around and lightened up the place. He didn't care this love was now forbidden. She didn't care. She looked afraid. For their love was true and strong, a love that knows no sight. She told him she became a doctor, known as the Angel of Death. She helped many patients die. Thank you, their final breath. So she couldn't understand why he was cast to hell for doing the same thing she did many times as well. They both had felt like black sheep, not meant for either place. So they just hid away, embraced forever, and their secluded little space. End poem. Mm-hmm.
Great read, Jean. Thank you very much. And Emmy, why don't we start with you, please?
What's that?
Emmy,
for me?
You there? Ah. Yes,
yeah,
please.
Hold on. Could you get around to me?
Yes. Laurent, how about you?
Wow. Excuse me. You want to talk about an opening line? He had helped kill his sister. She was ill and begged him so. Took away her misery, but when he died, he became a demon down below. You know, the meeting with his wife was eye-opening because she did the same thing he did. And yet, because she was in an official position to do that kind of thing, she became an angel. And because he was unofficial, not a nurse or a doctor, he was damned for it. I think it's all in the perception of, I mean, it's a frightening subject to tackle, first of all, euthanasia. And there are people in constant pain, unrelenting pain, whose existence is horrible. And I've often felt that if they wanted to die under those circumstances, they should be allowed to. And they know it's not a subject that would not arouse controversy. It arouses plenty of controversy. So he took something from the popular lexicon, turned it almost into a fantasy through the illustration, through the way he wrote it and set the piece. Wherever it was they met, probably hell because he couldn't escape, and yet they supported each other, and maybe that was part of the lot of imagination and excellent writing.
Excellent comment, Dylan. Thank you very much. And Gene, how about you?
You know, I think that Dark and Doris really presented this nicely. You know, she told a good story here, okay? But then the question this really poses in this, you know, without coming out and just saying it is, you know, you wonder why one would be right and one would be wrong. Why what he did was wrong, but what she did was right. And, you know, it's a good question, you know, and as Ron said, it's a matter of perception. You know, we try and ease someone's suffering or ease someone's pain, and, you know, same on us. That's kind of but it's a shitty way to do it, you know what I mean? People just, they don't deserve to suffer, you know, and you do everything you can to alleviate that from people, you know, to make them comfortable, to make them feel better. And sometimes there's not much more you can do. And I'm not, you know, I'm not the advocate saying, oh, well, run around and euthanize everybody. I'm not that person. But in this story, it presents it in two ways. And one is an angel and one is a demon. It is an interesting thought. And that's what I saw in this. I saw the back story, you know, all that question and that like little bit of confusion, I guess. So very well done, and thank you so much, Dark and Doris. Great job on this.
Nice. Thank you, Gene. And Emmy, how about you?
Yeah, I found it interesting as this sort of seems like the overall message is sort of like, there can be a very thin line between what's considered really beneficial and what's considered very, very, I guess, condemnable, if that makes sense. But in this particular case, it's almost like the two entities were drawn to each other because they happened to share many of the same beliefs. And so regardless of, one being an angel, one being a demon, they might have more in common with each other than the narrator would to other demons or the angel would to other angels. And so that was sort of an interesting message to me.
Nice. Thank you, Emmy. I think what really struck me was forbidden. And that kind of hints at the idea of forbidden fruit. And then, again, to start with, he had to help kill his sister. Again, that thought to another thought to the original sin of the first murder, so to speak. Yet it gets redrawn in a different fashion because of going on that thought of doing the right thing for the wrong reason or doing the anyway, you look at it. You can look at helping someone off. Some will look at it as murder. Some will be the ease of easing out that pain so their last moments are, or hours or days are spent in pure misery. So there's the idea of actually caring more in that moment that way. But still, a lot of people walk on that as being something you don't do. Yes, the idea on the back end of the notation to becoming the angel of death and getting thank yous in those final breaths is a different twist. And him dying, becoming a demon, only to be resurrected. And then they find each other. Emmy, you might be onto something with that thought of them being more alike than anything else and finding that little space for themselves. This hits on that idea of the ultimate black sheep theory. So thank you, DA. And Gene, we're back to you.
Okie dokie. The next piece I'm going to put up, Laurent, I'm going to ask you to read this. It's for Dan Vicino. Thank you very much.
Ooh.
You're off mute, Rosie.
That would be helpful, wouldn't it? Thank you so much. Thank you for being patient. Mm-hmm. Running to Catch Future Horizons by Daniel Duchino. Once in time, there was a child. I remember visions of seeing through his eyes. Sometimes I remember the memories and wonder of the truth. A child who dreamed of science fiction wonders, and today I walk among robots and hold world communication in my pocket. At night, I dream of grandfather memories as his eyes sparkled from the magic that he witnessed with me. Today, I walk through a past and I witness a birthing future. Now is a blinding flash of normality glaring off everything to blind me from the hands on my watch that reach out at every second for the jasmine grace of wisdom. And I stand feet of gray soil, and I kick up dust from the past with each step. Golden future sunset in my eyes, always just and pause.
Great reading, Laurent. Thank you very much. And Jean, why don't we start with you?
you always know when I'm behind, don't you? I think this was a great piece by Daniel. I know. You like to keep me on my toes. But I do. I think this was just a great piece by Daniel. The first three lines, you know, once in time there was a child. I remember visions of seeing through his eyes. You know, it just starts you out knowing that he's looking back. So North Harris. Okay. I was trying to read the author's notes at the same time. But I think that she presented it where, you know, you go back and you remember how you saw things, how you perceived things when you were young. You know, it was just nicely done. You know, a child who dreamed of science fiction wonders, and today I walk among robots and hold world communication in my pocket. At night I dream of grandfather memories. As his eyes sparkled from the magic that he witnessed with me, today I walk through a path and I witness a birthing future. Wonderful, because when we were kids, you know, we didn't think about any of this stuff being real. You know, they put it out there and it was like, what? You know, maybe, maybe not, you know. You know, we like to dream and pretend and think, oh, yeah, but here we are. And it's pretty amazing when we look back at that, and I find that great. And I'm going to charge him because I see through my eyes in that last few lines. I missed it at the end. Quarter. But it really was very well put together and very well expressed. And, you know, you can kind of, well, those of us that are old enough, we can kind of relate to it, totally. And, yeah, so I enjoyed it. And great reading a lot.
Thank you, Jean. Annie, how about you?
There are a few things of note here, but I think the second to last stanza that really made an effort of like really placing the narrator in time, if that makes sense. So it's like, and I stand feet of gray soil. It's like, almost to me that reads as being someone who's just lived in a more rural time, or maybe more of a laborer, if that makes sense, as that's pretty fairly easy to see if you just take a look at history and then kick up dust from the past with each step. So a very lovely sort of holistic piece on this forward thinking perspective.
Well said, Annie. Thank you very much. And Laurent, you got to read it. How about you?
Yes, I did. You know, I've looked, well, wait. Once in time, there was a child. I remember visions of seeing through his eyes. A child who dreamed of science fiction wonders. Today, I walk among robots and hold world communication in my pocket. I've looked through those same eyes, only to wake up one day and found I was living in those self-same visions, a character in a never-ending story of ultimate futures just out of reach. This poem is ultimately relatable to me. Outstanding work.
Excellent. Thank you, Laurent. I guess there's a nice touch of inspiration drawn from the thought of the dream and watching that dream become reality and then being able to share that reality with the next generation. Yet it keeps morphing back because our generation anyway, things have been going on an exponential ride upwards. So we're always trying to catch up with the newest technology, yet we're never going to be there because it is growing at that fast rate. And yet there's still awe in the visions that you see. And still, you tend to go back a little bit in time and you look at the originality of where it came from and how it all kick-started. And it still offers up taste of where we once were, where now we are, and everything just seems to be a little further out of reach than it was once at one time. So, nicely done, Dan. All right, Gene, we're back to you.
If you don't, well, I want to welcome Stelina to the board, and how are you tonight?
Good evening, everyone. Or good night, everyone.
Hello.
How are you all? Nice to be here.
Very good. Very good. It's good to have you here.
Hope you had a good Thanksgiving, by the way, everyone.
Well, thank you. Yes, yes, it was nice so far. Anyway, nobody's told me different. I'm just kidding.
I think that day gave us all the bird.
Yep. Now, Selena, did you happen to hear the last poem?
I didn't. I'm sorry. I was too busy trying to connect.
Oh, that's all right. I understand. I do. I just figured I would ask you before I moved on, in case you know you had.
Yes, thank you.
So, you're welcome. Now, Emmy, I'm going to ask you to read the next one. And this is by Allison Hodges. And I'm going to put it up now, and we'll work our way down.
Okay, so this is No Wishing Star by Allison Hodges. They say there is a wishing star, a light of hope that shines within each night. I see only dusk and dark, an envelope of gray that hides the light. The weight of darkness fills my soul. It holds no escape from my hopeless plight, only pain in dreary landscapes, with no room left for dreams or rays of light. I let a moan escape my lips. There were no ears to hear my tortured cries, just an echoing deafness, amplified each time I scream and tried. On a hollow night, I cannot move. My coffin lies in wait within the ground. I suffocate in my own despair, and in my endless longings I do drown. End poem.
Great read, Emmy. Thank you very much. And Selena, since you just arrived, why don't we start with you?
Okay, thank you. This is a lovely piece. I've lost the name. Wait a sec. Okay, never mind. Anyway, so it's not on my board. Anyway, so whatever. It's really a lovely piece talking about hope and how it brings you out from the darkness. But I love this second stanza. You know, one way darkness fills my soul. It holds no escape from my hopeless plight, only pain and dreary landscapes with no room left for the dreams or rays of light. This is really how it feels, you know, when you're sort of trying to fight your way out of the darkness and nothing can help you. But she talks of hope, or he talks of hope, you know, several times, and it shows that even when you're in the depths of despair, you know, you cling on to that's lingering there. But a great dark piece, yeah, very, very nicely written. Well done. Enjoyed it very much.
Thank you, Selena. Jean, how about you?
You are so good at that. this piece, I thought it was very well penned. It spoke to me of like drowning in a depression. You know, you can't get out of it. You feel weighted down by it, and you're trying to escape, but you know you're suffocating because you can't pull yourself out. And that's kind of what I got from it. And I thought that it was just well worded and well put together. And Allison, I want to thank you for sharing with us, as always. Great piece and well expressed. So thank you,
Jean. And Laurent, how about you?
Yeah, this is true suffocation. Absolute absence of hope. When you can't even envision a wishing star, when you're drowning in endless longings, I mean, it's all despair. You have to admire this poem, other than the intense transmittal of the overall tone and mood that I just described. It's the impeccable pacing of this, the excellent rhythm, the wonderful rhyming. It's as good a rhyming poem as you're going to hear. Unfortunately, or fortunately for that matter, it's on a subject that does not bring a smile, but it definitely brings an understanding, a deeper communication with the way that the author feels. Excellent.
Thank you, Laurent. And Emmy, how about you?
Well, yeah, so I had a pretty, it felt very structured and fairly easy to read when I read it over, so nice job there with that. I think the last stanza was what kind of struck me. My coffin lies in wait within the ground. There's this sort of emphasis on feelings of deadness inside, and that's that part was good.
Thank you, Amy. I'm going to go with drawing off a couple of, I see only dust and dark, and there were no ears, just an unechoing deafness. I'm getting the thought of someone who's locked inside their own mind, and in that, it's nothing but darkness. You can walk along the line with somebody who's got Alzheimer's, no way to actually reach out and touch the world itself, because you're suffocating and drowning on the inside because there is no way to express. There isn't anyone to hear you. You can't see or anything but that darkness. And the back end, the last stanza, my coffin lies in wait within the ground, that kind of hits on the idea of being weighted to the bed itself, unable to, maybe you're even somebody who's sitting in a coma. The idea of understanding, yet no way to offer up anything in those moments. So I like this, Allison. Thank you very much. All right, Jane, we're back to you.
Okay, the next piece I'm going to put up is by Weaver of Dreams, and this has an audio, and then we're going to read everybody's review on the air with us. So let me start here. This is called Fire by Weaver of Dreams. Let me hit the button.
There is a sense that great danger is close by. Although young, with much to learn, the scent of evil, putrid and all-pervading, is noted. Billowing on a light breeze, it is a proximity alarm to be heeded. In the ether is a dark entity, terrifyingly beautiful, with the power of sexual attraction which defeats with ease any opposition to her will, although the one who would defy her is a clever young warlock. Seemingly asleep, William waits, knowing that the demoness hovers in the mist of the hinterland, which is her domain. Unable to resist garnering his soul, she slips from her hidden realm, fluttering close to her prey at last. Then they strike, dozens of seasoned warlocks, wands primed, releasing a blast of flame upon the hapless horror, who, wings scorched, body melting rapidly, reveals her true form, a hag, now disintegrated, defeated.
Great read, Weezer. Kate, thank you very much for the sound clap. It is very much appreciated. All right, Laurent, why don't you kick us off?
Yeah, this feels like an excerpt from a novel, almost. There's a story before, and that while this seems to have a pretty definitive ending, the story continues. That ether of a dark entity, terrifyingly beautiful, with the power of sexual attractions, which defeats with ease any opposition to her will. That is a storyline that is immortal and handled at any number of different levels. The way it was handled here is with a delicacy, but with a power in the writing that lets us know exactly what was at stake. It's an ending that I like because, again, it seems to be part of a larger story. It was very well written, very well written.
Sorry about that. Thank you, Rob. Galina, how about you?
Right, well, I remember this piece very well because this has been Arcana's contest. I think something things with wings or something like that. And this was, unfortunately, when he had COVID and he asked me to take over the judging. So I remember this piece very well. And I found it to be like a really fantastic fantasy story, part of one. Katie tells a really good story in her poems, I always find. And as I had put in the comments, you know, that the way she recites her poetry, she always sounds so, so very mysterious, you know, and intriguing. And she really puts a lot of effort into unfolding her stories. I love the line. Well, I love the whole thing, but the stanza, you know, the penultimate stanza, seemingly asleep, William waits, knowing that the demoness hovers in the midst of hinterland, which is her domain. You know, there's that sort of very heavy atmosphere that you never know what's going to happen. So I really, really love this piece by Katie. And I thank her very much for sharing and for putting it into the contest. It was a joy to read. Thank you very much, Katie.
Thank you, Selena. And Emmy, how about you?
Well, yeah, I mean, again, like another fantasy piece that seems to stretch right into the exact kind of stuff that I happen to love. So this very much seemed like some sort of like the classic villain feasting on the youth of others and preserving their form as a means of doing that. And of course the sort of strategy of kind of luring her in and then striking actually reminded me of the Japanese honeybees with the giant hornets that did basically the same thing, luring the giant hornet into their nest and then smothering it and actually not burning it to death but causing it to overheat via rubbing their their bodies together in a rather, it's a very brutal death, but if you consider the damage that giant hornets do to Japanese honeybee hives, it's actually kind of well-deserved in that sense. But yeah, it's a lovely little piece.
Like you said, I mean, thank you. Jean, how about you? But you gotta unmutate.
Damn it.
Now that you finished your comment.
It's a wonderful piece by Kate. I love to listen to her stories. No matter what her topic is of her story, she has such a wonderful way of putting it together. And I love to listen to her read them. Her voice is just kind of soothing. Even when she's telling a tale like this, her voice is still soothing. It kind of keeps you, wondering. But yeah, I was gonna pull on one of the stanzas, but like the last one is good, the first one is good. They're all good. So great job, Kate, and thank you for sharing with us tonight, as always. So all yours, Rex.
Well, everybody, I like the turnabout is fair play because she's obviously gotten away with this for so long. She's got fat and lazy in her demeanor, and overlooks that which is sitting right in front of her face, the sort of someone just laying by perchance for her to pick up easily is just what gets her in the end. So I like that thought. Nicely done, Kate.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. For my next magic trick, Laurent, I'm going to have you read your piece next. So here it is.
All right. This is called To Dally. To Dally, transported by the ecstasy of epiphany, an episodic dream state into which one can crawl, tucking the boulder in behind. Time becomes an abstract concept. Dolly-like chunks of past realities float by, whispers carried by storm clouds thundering in their august, graying silence. Moonscapes of Nevada, Hawaii's lashing surf, sibilant and seductive waves of wheat in America's heartland, New England lobster traps, images drawn and quartered into a mosaic of shattered pasts, stretching from Europe to the USA, to the tiger traps of Vietnam and back again. Only what is remembered is true. All else is lost, a momentary gleam of gold in a rushing stream, fingertip close, carried away by inexorable currents, drops swept downstream. You are the memory which remains. A sack of bones and skin deciding which foot to limp home on. End pause.
Great read, Laurent. Thank you very much. And Gene, why don't you kick us out?
Well, I thought this was nicely penned, Laurent. When you said here, only what is remembered is true. All else is lost. A momentary gleam of gold in a rushing stream, fingertip close, carried away by inexorable current. It's true. You don't remember it. It's gone. Oof. And to dally, just linger, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. Wonderful imagery throughout here. Great sets of the different places. In the states of Nevada, Hawaii's lashing surf. I mean, you put in a wonderful imagery in these different areas. And I think you wrote it well. And your closing stanza, of course, was great. Thus, flip downstream, you are the memory which remains, a sack of bones and skin deciding which foot to limp home on. It's really nicely penned. So, well done.
Thank you, Gene.
Hi, Jane. Delina, how about you?
Right. Okay. So, I have this big factor on this work. This is no exception. I love first of all, kind of this. I don't know how to describe it, but the sounds really hits me. That sounds beautiful altogether. I also really like the allusion to reality. You know, myself, a fan of Jake. I loved, and you know, it hasn't escaped me that sort of the title sort of it rhymes with Dallas. So it sort of it ties in very nicely, and to Dali's paintings, this reminds me of his painting time, or the persistence of time, and I get a very surreal and ethereal feel. I know everybody gets different sort of feeling from everybody's piece, but. It's a piece which lingers in your mind. It's a very, very well-written piece, and bravo, Laurent. Really, I love the piece.
Thank you, Stella.
Thank you, Stella. Oh. And Andy, how about you?
I mean, this is just so rich with detail. I think the... one of the real good parts about this is just the use of language is often here conveying an American perspective, which I don't mean that as being like overly patriotic or anything. Just a lot of these come straight from American education in a way. Some of these I remember one adjective, the august graying silence is sort of this thing that's sort of fading in its initial intensity or perhaps majestic aspects as time goes on. And what seemed so upfront and new back then becomes old and eventually just washes away. And there's, of course, I think the real kicker here is that there's so much detail here, so often you're sort of imagining that gradually just kind of moving past, and you realize that there's so much just within the present to sort of grasp onto and recognize as you age. So a very wonderful, reflective piece that I think deserves more attention than what it may have initially received. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. Excellent comment.
Well said, everybody. All right, I think Stellene hit on a great note, persistence of memory, because you've got detail, not detail, you've got the larger modes of that perception written within this. But it also hits on the sort of age and how time gets warped as one ages. And it almost feels as though the details have been absconded with, because the mind offers up that note of it gets necrotic in nature. It tends to, it'll delete or flush those minor and minute details which give the life richness, but you still are left with those larger values. The moonscapes of Nevada, Hawaii's lashing surf, the wheat in America's heartland, New England lobster traps. Those are persistent memories because they're rich and full in the moment, but it's the surrounding details which have been drawn away and kind of, as you hit it, mosaics of shattered past, those little tidbits that you no longer have readily at hand. And sometimes they come, but sometimes they don't. As you put it, drops swept downstream. You are the memory which remains. A sack of bones and skin deciding which foot to limp home on. That sack of bones and skin hinting at Bennett at the age, the sort of age coming in on itself, and you're wondering if you've managed the rest without losing it all.
Yeah, and not only that, but both of you heard, so thank you so much.
You're welcome. All right, James, we're back on you.
Okay, the next one we'll put up is by you, Emiliana, so whenever you are ready, go give us our roses while we are still here. There we go.
Yeah, okay. This poem is Give Us Our Roses While We Are Still Here by yours truly. Chair Lake's great boards. The balloon tube pops in sequence. Fire envelops your backside. You slide across wet on cold tiles under slurred pinks carved from blues. Bruised whistles melt over busted candles, roll across stained irises, trailing in glass fragments where the revolving lights toss. Fall stripped our petals to clouds and perfume aerosols, holding distilled 2 minutes. Scarves and glitter slump in red splinters. Our candles obscured the stars, leaving hollow shroud left us alone. End poem.
Great read, Emmy. Thank you very much. And Laurent, why don't we kick it with you first, please?
This is a wonderfully abstract look, according to the author's notes to the response of the shooting in Colorado Springs. The way that you describe fire envelops your backside, you slide across wet on cold tiles under slurred pinks carved from blues. Your description initially leaves or left me a little puzzled, but then all of a sudden it clicked immediately, and I had to admire the phrasing, like trailing in glass fragments where the revolving lights toss, fall stripped our petals to clouds. This is wonderfully done. It's so painful, so well interpreted, without throwing any particular invectives in any direction. It just speaks so so deeply of the sorrow in an abstract way, at least abstract to me. It's got a great, great finish. Lovely piece.
Well said, Laurent. Thank you. And Kate, I'm excited. Galina, how about you?
Okay. Yeah, I have to agree. This is abstract piece, and yet even though it's very easy to understand the pain within it, you know, and the sort of feeling that, you know, the feeling of not being accepted, and you know, even sort of persecuted for what you want to be, what you are, which is, you know, in our day and age, it's really a horrible thing to go through. And this poem, it needs more than one read. You have to read again to get a full grip of what she's describing. There are some really great lines here, and I have to agree with Laurent, the last piece, the last sort of little bit, is really so poignant. Our candles obscured the stars, leaving hollow shroud. left us alone. You know, this was a celebration of unity of people and of the country, and it sort of it ended in such a despair, and so a wonderfully powerful piece. One that makes you really think about a lot of aspects of modern life, really, and understanding and acceptance. You know, so very, very well done, Elliot. Bravo.
Thank you, Selena. And Jean, how about you? But you got to unmute.
I knew it. I know. It was nicely expressed in abstract work. I'm really honest. I thought it was a well-penned acknowledgement to the Colorado tragedy. And you did a wonderful job putting it out there. You know, you didn't come right out and you weren't real blunt with it, but it was understood. And I think, I think you did justice to your thoughts with this piece. Nicely worded and put out there. Thank you.
Wonderful comments, everybody. And I like the abstract nature in this, but you went deliberate in voice to start off with. Actually, through the whole thing, but you wrote it in such a way that it punches you with that sort of abstract. Chair legs, great boards, the balloon, two pops in sequence, slurred pink scarf from blues. I like the thought with the bruised whistle. There's such a nice shrill note, right, with those two words itself. Busted candles roll across stained irises. Again, complimentary language. And that last two line before the us alone, our candles obscure the stars, leaving hollow shroud left. A quiet note to vigil in that moment, which was a great touch to finish off, as well as dropping in us and alone at the back end. All right, Jean, we're coming back to you.
Okay. Now, the next piece I'm going to put up, I bet you can't guess who it's by. Yes, I am. And the next one by Stelina. I'm going to put that up, and I'm going to hit the button because I have an audio for this one. Okay, here we go.
Abrates neagion toro, kritos katuantlos esti, bod voi ilusetos logo tetonti, gloistom divigandeti. Aglihus senacus nestrus nimus vetete, catus ararimas nebigoros, suaritu namantas gainiomus, logus unde esti do lacui mestigen. A warrior queen of a Celtic realm. When her husband died, she then passed the helm. In 60 AD, when the Romans stormed, they faced naked fighters, painted for war. Her people were enslaved by Roman rule. But Queen Boudica was nobody's fool. In her wake, the sound of her name made Romans quake. A fearsome foe was she, and afraid to fight, her battle cries chilling in the midst of night. She took no prisoners, left no soul behind. The acts they committed sent her out of her mind. With grief for the rape of a daughter she cherished, she could not rest till every last one had perished. Abalcus senacus nestrum nimus vetete, baudis de bastum vitusis diabion. Bardoisum cantlum canasonti, viros tras etiam ana humam biveti. Echtos hepirum es iotec sene buveti, adeus senacum nestrus nimus locete. Fearlessly she fought for the freedom of her land. Against her enemies she took a brave stand. She fought like a man, though the Romans were strong. The battle raged on, bloody and long. Yet in the end, defeated was she. Couldn't face the prospect of not being free. They say drinking poison, she lay down and died. Was buried as a queen with patriotic pride. Abrates neagiontoro.
Great read, Selena. Thank you very much for the shout out. It is very much appreciated. And
you're
very
well.
Abby, why don't we start with you, Abby, please?
Well, this is a very interesting piece. It was nice actually to hear it read properly in its in the actual language, and of course, a common thing I usually notice with these kinds of like translated poems is that oftentimes you can't properly appreciate all of the rhythmic and rhyming qualities of it. But you have to make with what you've got, basically. I thought this was like a lovely homage to a rather significant historical figure. I had definitely heard of Queen Boudicca myself, but had not actually read her story. So it was actually nice being educated in that sense. So yeah, wonderful stuff.
Thank you, Annie. Laurent, how about you?
I don't know. I can be so damned effusive sometimes, but I just absolutely love this piece. It's rapping with a flavor of the ancients. It's brought to life in mostly spoken song in impeccable fashion. The mixture of words and phrasing with such great production that it leaves me feeling like I've been to the movies. And it's entertaining in the truest of ways, leaving me wanting more. I love the historical value and interpretations of the culture and the language. Just great stuff.
Thank you, Laurent. All right, Jean, are you unmuted?
No, I was not. Don't be so damn fresh. Of course I wasn't. Selena, this is fabulous. I thought it was a great write and a wonderful performance.
Thank you.
You know, incredibly creative, and I really thought it was outstanding. So I said three words in this comment that I very seldom ever use in my comments, so just so you're aware. You know, usually I don't go overboard, but I really liked the way you put it together. I liked how you wrote it, but I really liked how you performed it as well. Just excellent. And thank you so much for sharing with us
tonight.
Thank you. It was great. Thank you.
I'm
glad you enjoyed it.
Were those three words, holy sheep, with Batman?
Something like that.
All right. Okay. Selena, I knew where you were going with the picture you had up top, and you certainly didn't disappoint. The background music was properly a motif for this. And I don't know how you managed to get all of the Proto-Britannic language in without that much depth.
Took a long time.
Oh, I'm not surprised, because you got to take each word by singularity. Oh, gee. can I really know how to say this? And then you've got to kind of phrase it out for yourself so you do get it right. I like that. But the beat to the Sioux with the English in between was perfect. And then offering up the Boudicca's tail, which was wonderfully done. So this was a fitting piece. And she probably would have enjoyed it.
Probably.
Yeah, this sport, is so challenging. Thank you very much, everybody.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Thank you.
All right, Jean, we're coming to you. We might have time for one more, if you want it.
I think, yeah, we'll give it a try. I have this one here by S. Sharp, and it's called The Bull Rider, Lyndon B. Johnson. So, here we go. And I have a sound file for that, believe it or not.
The Bull Rider, Wrestling Steer and Stonewall, Breaking Wild Horses. One hand through the bull loop, one in the air, 8 seconds. Assassin, shooting in Dealey Plaza, Kennedy down, Johnson inauguration, first second, dust stirs as the bull leaves the ground. Legislation, elementary and secondary schools act, Miranda rights, civil rights, a voting rights act, war on poverty. The bull, angry, crashes to the ground. Second. The crowd screams. Cowboy hangs on as the bull comes down. Thurgood Marshall, Supreme Court, Great Society, prosperity dispersed. Gulf of Tonkin resolution. MLK receives the Nobel Peace Prize. Medicare, Medicaid. 3rd second, bull spins and lurches, swallowing his neck, bowing to the earth. Freedom's summer murders, civil rights workers, shot and buried, KKK, crowd momentarily silenced. Selma to Montgomery march, Watts riots, 6 days of unrest. Race riots in Newark and Detroit, 4th second. The bull wildly leaping, thrusting into the air. America bombs North Vietnam. James Meredith shot. Black power arises. Malcolm X assassinated. Anti-war marchers storm the Pentagon. Black Panther Party. Yellow eyes on the darkest of nights. 5th second, bull snorting, determined, under the rodeo lights. North Korea captures the USS Pueblo. Vietnam, Tet Offensive. Focus shifts, vulnerabilities exposed. At home, the people fear Vietnam. It's out of control. My Lai massacre, Wallace and Kennedy enter the presidential race. 6 second, rider wavering, thrown violently from side to side. Nationally televised announcement, Johnson will not seek re-election. 7 second, rider flies from the hump, hitting the hard Texas ground. The bull bounds aggressively onward. Cowboy left in a cloud of dust. Martin Luther King assassinated. Columbia University protests. Robert Kennedy killed too. Soviets invade Czechoslovakia. Humphrey nominated. Nixon elected. Brezhnev doctrine sets the future tone. The next rider. Wows the rodeo crowd.
Great read, Scott. Thank you very much for the sound clap. It is very much appreciated. And well, we're at the back end of the hour, so everybody drop a comment in, please. And Gene, it's coming to you.
Okay. Well, that was a great piece by Scott. It was a great way of putting some history pieces out there and, you know, really penning them well. I want to thank everybody who called in tonight and helped us read. Everyone who wrote for us tonight, you guys are great. We have, I think we have like 10 or 11 carryovers. Just a little bit of poetry. So I'll definitely figure out where we're going to play this. Half a show. So maybe I'll dredge up another half a show somewhere, but I'm not sure. Anyway, I want to thank everyone, as always. You guys are, like I said, wonderful. Really go above and beyond every show. And I appreciate you all. Rex, thank you as always for being a co-host. You, somebody's got to keep me in line. Yeah. And, yeah, I hope everyone has a great rest of the weekend. You laugh, Stelina. You have no idea. It's a tough job. It's a tough job keeping me straight.
Yeah, I can imagine. I can imagine. It's a lot of it. Been a bad life.
Yeah.
But we do appreciate you all. Believe me.
Oh, God. Well, we all appreciate you guys, too. Without you guys, we'd have no shows. You know, so it's definitely working together. Yeah, it definitely is too. It's all of us pulling
that's
together.
That's the best thing,
it's wonderful. So, anyway, I want to thank everybody one last time. I hope you all have a wonderful weekend and a great week next week. If you did not hear your piece read tonight, forgive me, but I will be carrying it forward to, well, either next Friday or somewhere in between. We never know. And you all take care of yourselves now and have a wonderful night.
So keep
night.
Listening.
Thank you.
Keep listening.
Oh, what's that, Stelina? I didn't hear what you said, honey.
Keep listening. Keep listening.
Yes. Keep listening. Keep listening. We never know.
That's it.
What's the next year. Exactly. Hey, we're number 10. You know, listening in, you might make us number 9. You never know. Anyway, take care. Thanks, everyone.
Good night, everybody. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you
Good night, everyone. Good night.
Take care.
Good night.
Bye. Bye.